middle of nothing, a chill wind blowing. Morpheus, human-sized again, if ever he was a giant, turns back to the four women and the cuckoo. He looks very tired, very alone. Barbie feels sorry for him, but she doesn't know why.
Are you okay?
Endings are mixed blessings, Princess Barbara. But yes, I am okay. Thank you for asking. Now I must speak with your compatriots. There. Half the compact is discharged. Now, I wonder if you three know the trouble you've caused.
Morpheus looks at Thessaly. One eyebrow lifts.
I know you, do I not?
I don't believe so.
I do. Yes. We have met before, Witch Woman.
It was a long time ago, Dream King. I'm surprised you remember.
There were more of you then.
Yes. Now it's only me.
Why aren't you dead?
Oh, look, don't you start. It's a long story and I don't really want to go into it.
I see.
Dream King. That one there is my legitimate prey, she who calls herself the Cuckoo. She attempted to harm me. Her life is mine.
No, her life is her own.
She would have harmed me, Morpheus. I demand my rights.
You demand, Thessalian? The moon has tumbled into the sea in this place. It cannot take you or your followers back to the waking world. You are a trespasser here without my consent. I am very displeased.
What's he saying, Thess?
I am saying, young lady, that you are here entirely...
He's saying we're in trouble.
Real trouble?
Yes, real trouble.
New York City, 6 a.m. The tongue in George's face, hanging nailed to the wall of his apartment, begins to move again.
Miss Wanda?
Hi, George. You're talking again, then?
You make him hold his tongue, lady. He ain't a natural thing. If she wanted me to hold my tongue, then she'd have to do it for me because I don't have any hands. That's kind of my sort of joke.
That's right, George. It differs from the usual kind of joke, only in the vast gulf between it and any kind of sense of humor. So, what's happening?
If you're gonna be mean to me, I won't tell you.
I'm sorry, George. Tell us what?
About the really heavy stuff. It's all really getting bad now.
Barbie?
I can't feel the land anymore, or the cuckoo. It's all moved away.
What about Barbie? And Fox? And Hazel?
Maybe they're dead. I don't really know. They've gone.
Jesus wept. Yeah, that's bad stuff, all right.
Your friend having nightmares here?
That's not the really bad stuff. The really bad stuff is the storm. It's not just a storm anymore. And this is a pretty old building.
George, what are you trying to say?
Lady!
What the fuck?
This whole place is coming down!
The ladies' restroom is dirty, and the porcelain tiles on the walls and floor are cracked. It's been a long bus ride to Kansas. Barbie stands in front of the mirror, hair tied back, eyebrow pencil in her hand. She looks good in the little black dress.
Oh boy, 20 minutes before she gets here. I'm really not looking forward to this. Part of me is screaming just to get on the next Greyhound bus and get out of here. I've been bus hopping for 3 days now. 1,600 miles. I can't believe this is happening. Apply makeup. Breathe deeply. try not to remember.
The Sandman, Act 2, Episode 17, A Game of You. I woke up and one of us was crying.
The Isle of Thorns, all that was left of the land, Barbie's refuge in dreams, is still fresh in her memory. And she is back there again. The isle drifts in the midst of nothingness, the chill wind flapping the hem of Dream's black robe as he faces Barbie and her friends, Thessaly, Hazel, and Foxglove. Sitting nearby is the cuckoo, an 8-year-old Barbie who looks vulnerable and obstinate. Barbie herself, in her torn and tattered princess party dress, addresses Morpheus by the only name she knows for him.
Mr. Murphy, are you going to do anything about the cuckoo?
Do anything? Saving only your boon, I have done all I came here to do, Barbara.
But she still has to be stopped.
Why?
Well, she's dangerous. She's evil! Ha!
Dangerous, perhaps, but evil. She acts according to her nature. Is that evil?
Listen, she was going to kill me!
And your Thessalian friend wanted to kill her. Should I kill Thessaly for you also?
Thessaly, in her nightgown, robe, and fluffy bunny slippers, glares at Morpheus from behind large, round glasses.
Don't push your luck, Dream King.
I think he was joking, Thess.
I don't.
But you played your part in the cuckoo's deeds also, Barbara. After all, it is your fault that she was bound to this skerry and could not leave it when her time came to fly, after the manner of her kind. Yours and Rose Walker's, I should say.
Rose? What's she got to do with this?
Rose Walker? I knew a Rose Walker. She was Judy's token straight friend. Multicolored hair?
Yeah.
Small world.
If any have wrought evil, it is your friends who walked the moon's road into your dreams.
We were only trying to help Barbie.
I know.
Oh, I don't know what to make of anything anymore.
Foxglove, with her cropped white hair and ratty bathrobe, looks sad and nervous. Hazel, boyish in a long t-shirt with her pudding bowl hair, pushes forward.
You said we were trespassers here. That you're not pleased with us?
No, I am not.
Are you going to do anything bad to us?
Do anything? No.
Sometimes inaction is itself action, of course.
Of course. As I said, you are trespassers. You came here without my cognizance, nor with my consent. You must pay the price for that.
Lord Morpheus?
Yes, Thessalian.
What will happen to this place we're standing on, when you go and Barbie goes?
I will leave it here for you. It would be unfair to remove it.
Oh, please.
So you'll just leave us here? Is that what you're saying?
Can you give me any reason not to?
But we only came here because we thought Barbie was in trouble.
So you have said.
I'm here, Fox.
Barbara, when I first created this land quite some time ago, I made a compact with the woman for whom I created it. It was a compromise. But she died when her time came, and the compact remained uninvoked.
Uh-huh.
You have invoked the compact. The first half is completed. The land's time is done. Now only the final pact remains. You may ask a boon of me.
What kind of a boon?
Any boon that it is within my power to give.
Barbie gestures at the cuckoo, who sits scratching in the sand with a stick.
Can I ask you to kill her, the cuckoo?
Certainly. If that is to be your boon.
This boon of mine. Could you remake the land? Make it all again?
Certainly.
And bring back Wilkinson and Martin Tenbones and everyone again? All my friends?
Indeed. If you wish me to. Well?
I don't know. Let me think.
Barbie, tell him to eliminate the cuckoo. I'll get the rest of us back home somehow. Trust me on this.
Oh, shut up, Thessaly. I've got a boon, huh? Okay, Murphy. I'll take the Dorothy option. I want to send us all home. Me and Hazel and Foxglove and Thessaly. I want us back safe and sound.
Very well.
Does that mean I can fly?
Yes.
Barbie, thank you.
Go away.
The little cuckoo walks away from them down the causeway, which is now attached to nothing. She begins to run, spreading her arms out wide, like a child playing airplanes.
I can fly!
As she runs, feathers grow from her arms. Her body straightens and more feathers form, and the transformation is complete. She is a huge bird. Flying away from them, a cuckoo flapping off into the nothingness.
Wow! That one night's dream I pick at, scab-like, in my head.
In the restroom, Barbie has carefully drawn a net veil on her face, in eyebrow pencil.
Most dreams vanish at daybreak. You forget. Not this. I don't forget. Over and over and over.
There, Barbara. The cuckoo has gone. Out of this dream world into worlds beyond your imagining. Or my dominion. She shall not trouble you again. And perhaps your choice was wisest. After all, give me your hand.
Okay.
You specified safe and sound in your boon. Thus, it will take me a little time before I can send you all back. I will take my leave of you now, Barbara. I will be seeing you again, although you, for your part, are unlikely to see me.
Oh. Well, nice to meet you.
You too.
Us? Me and Foxglove?
You have been lucky. Understand me when I say that, little maiden, little mother. The future has strange journeys in store for you both, but perhaps in future you should choose your traveling companions with more care.
Uh-huh.
And you, Thessalian, you have been foolish and unconsidered in your actions. You will hardly survive another century if you continue in this manner of behavior, lady.
I don't remember asking your advice, Dream King.
It was freely given, and well meant. Farewell.
I probably still smell like 3 days in Greyhound buses and stations. But there's only so much you can do with soap and a washcloth in the john.
Barbie pulls a black pillbox hat out of her big black leather bag and places it on her head with the drawn-on veil. The look feels suitable to the occasion.
Not that Wanda will mind, maybe. But I do want to make a good impression. After he left, it felt like we sat on the sand forever, waiting to wake up.
All four women sitting in a row. Barbie at one end, Foxglove with her arm around Hazel in the middle, Thessaly at the other end.
He comes on like he's so cool. Who does he think he's fooling? Well, he's not fooling me, oh no.
Thess, can I ask you a question?
Sure, Hazel. And it isn't even as if he's good looking. He's too thin for a start.
How old are you?
I was born in the day of greatest darkness, in the year the bear totem was shattered.
What's that supposed to mean?
Haze, leave her alone. She's upset.
But I wasn't.
Then there was that sensation you get on waking, as everything moved further away,
then I started to become aware of the cold. And in my dream, it was warm. And so I tried to stay in my dream forever. But the harder I held on, the further it slipped away from me. And then I woke up. Anyway, somehow I really am in Kansas.
Ho ho! What in the hell is that?
Don't reckon I know, but it can sit on my face anytime.
Assholes.
You must be her, aren't you?
The woman is in her early 40s, wearing a trim black dress with a black coat and purse, longish graying hair and a cigarette. She bears a family resemblance to Wanda.
Aren't you Alvin's friend?
I'm Wanda's friend. I'm Barbie.
Right. I'm Alvin's Aunt Dora. Sit down. You must be exhausted. Can I get you anything?
Just coffee, please.
You hungry, child?
Well, just a little. Yes.
Jenny Sue, fetch me 2 large cups of coffee and 2 slices of blueberry pie. Big slices, you hear?
You got it, Dora.
Now, what's that on your face?
It's a veil. I just drew it on.
You aren't some kind of weirdo, are you, girl?
No.
How close were you?
To Wanda? Pretty close. She lived in the room next door to me. We'd talk a lot, go shopping, you know, just hang out, girl talk.
Listen, girl, when you meet the mans, Ezekiel and Joan Ellen, well, they aren't broad-minded like me. You make sure that you talk about their son. They've been hurt enough by all this. You don't want to make things any harder for them. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's funny. It's out here you expect twisters and freak weather, not in New York.
No. Nobody expected it.
You want to talk about it?
Okay, ladies, here's your coffee, and here's the pie.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jenny Sue.
Hey, are you a friend of Alvin?
I'm a friend of Wanda's, yes.
We were at high school together. We were all sorry to hear.
Thanks. The last time I saw Wanda alive, it was the night before the storm. You see, I was asleep when it happened. I missed out on the whole thing, hurricane and all.
Bet it gave you bad dreams, though. When I slept through the big one we had here a few years back, I dreamed I was in the war and they were dropping bombs.
Yes. I had dreams.
So then what?
Then I woke up and I was soaking wet. And it was daylight. And there wasn't any house anymore. I was under a pile of rubble. You know, what was weird was what saved my life. There was a woman on top of me. She was dead. This little old woman. Her name was Maisie Hill, and I'd never met her before. And she was on top of me. She was crushed by falling bricks. She was killed. Wanda was killed. And this guy upstairs was killed. George? Oh, that was really nasty. He must have been in the bathtub when it happened. His whole upper body was completely mashed up. Poor guy. I mean, he was kind of a mommy's boy. Sort of creepy, but he never did anyone any harm. No one deserves to go like that.
So they pulled you out of the wreckage?
Yeah. It was the emergency services. They were pretty good.
Say, hi, I'm Mary Gentian. Can we get a shot of the victim?
Who's she, kid? I thought the cops were gonna clear the area.
The first thing I saw when they pulled me out was a TV camera. I'm freezing and bruised, and they've pulled this poor old woman off me, and I'm just numb inside. I'm in shock. And you know what happens?
We're rolling. No board.
In 3, 2, 1. I'm Mary Gentian, viewers, and this is just one of the many Manhattan properties that was effectively demolished by last night's hurricane. Mean Lisa, as they're already calling her. Behind me, you can see...
Hey, lady! Get your friggin' butt out of the friggin' way! We gotta get this woman to the hospital.
Listen, Buster, I have a First Amendment right to broadcast.
And I have a First Amendment right to bust your friggin' chops if you don't move.
And that was when I saw Wanda. She was in one of those big plastic bags. What are they called? Body bags? You could see everything. She looked like she was asleep. That was a scary thing. I wanted to reach out and wake her up. I found myself thinking about plastic bags and how dangerous it is to put them over your head because you can't breathe and you can suffocate and everything. And I think that was when I went kind of hysterical. Because they told me later I was just shouting at them, telling them to get her out of the bag and get some clothes on her.
It's okay, honey. It's okay.
I'm sorry.
Can we have some more coffee over here?
Like I say, I was pretty much out of my mind by that point. I remember seeing... Well, no. Not seeing. Imagining. This huge, bright red slug, like a... I don't know, like some kind of tongue slithering through the rubble?
Here you go, ladies.
Thank you.
So, how about the other people in the building? They weren't hurt?
Well, Hazel and Foxglove? They were two friends who lived upstairs from me. They were fine. And Thessaly, she was across the way. I think she was fine, too.
Thessaly. Isn't that a place in Greece or somewhere like that?
Maybe, I don't know. We never talked much. Scarlet, she owns the building and lived on the very top floor. She was visiting some friends in Maine that week.
Mm-hmm.
Scarlet came to see me in the hospital. She was really upset. She says the insurance could take years to pay up. And she was really fond of Wanda.
It must have been very traumatic for you.
Yes.
Well, it's probably a mercy. The good Lord taken Alvin.
Wanda.
God gives you a body. It's your duty to do well by it. He makes you a boy, you dress in blue. He makes you a girl, you dress in pink. You mustn't go trying to change things.
Wanda didn't change anything. She was meant to be a woman.
Oh, well, Jenny Sue, the check.
Right with you, Dora.
How was the ride here?
Shitty. Long. Cramped.
Yeah. Come on, Jenny Sue, the funeral will be starting soon.
4:50 if you're in a hurry.
I'm leaving 5.
Much obliged. You gonna be in town long, hon?
I don't think so. I'm just here for the funeral.
Well, you come back anytime you need a good meal, and we'll fatten you up some.
Thank you.
The red one's mine. Hop in.
Thanks.
So where are you living now your apartment's blown away?
I don't really know. I don't have a job, and my savings are almost gone. I still get an alimony check, and that helps a little, when Ken remembers to send it. Can I fix my makeup?
There's a mirror in the sun shield.
Thanks. So, I don't know where I'll be living. When I was ready to get out of the hospital, they gave me your card about Wanda's funeral, and I just called you and bought my bus ticket and came. I may not go back to New York. I may just keep going west.
But surely you want to go home.
I'm not sure about that. I don't think home's a place anymore. I think it's more a state of mind.
I see. How about the other people in your house?
Well, Hazel and Foxglove have moved upstate to stay with Hazel's mother. Hazel's a chef, and she'll get another job easy. And Fox can write anywhere, so they'll be okay. And Thessaly, I don't know. I'm sure she'll be fine. She'll just get another room somewhere. Thessaly's a survivor. I mean, she's really quiet. And I'm sure when you get to know her, she's really sweet. But sometimes I think maybe there's more going on the inside than you'd imagine. I don't know. I'm sure she'll be fine.
This is it.
Thanks for the ride.
My pleasure. Just need to put on my hat.
Real veil, huh?
Yes. I'm not as clever as you with eyebrow pencil.
You look nice.
Thanks.
Over there?
Yes. Looks like they're all at the graveside.
Of course, it's grass. I should have thought twice about wearing heels. Wanda would laugh at me now.
Please, don't upset them. It's Alvin, okay?
No, it's not okay. It's Wanda. I'll be polite, but it's Wanda.
Zeke, Joan Ellen, this is Barbara, Alvin's friend from New York.
Mr. Mann?
Thank you for coming all this way to show your respects, girl. Appreciate it.
How do you do, Mrs. Mann?
The hurricane. It was God's judgment on a city of sinners.
Barbara, why don't you stand for the interment
of our sure, son why not? Brother, it's Alvin suffocating Mann. Here.
Now, Zeke and Joan Allen have asked for a few words to be read from the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 12, verses 1 to 8. Remember now thy creator.
Dora, what's that young girl done to her face?
Painted a veil on, Zeke. That's what they all do in New York.
Dora, I don't want that Barbara person coming back to the house for coffee and cakes afterwards. What with the people we've got coming over. This town's gonna remember Alvin as the God-fearing child that he should have been.
That's not what I'd call hospitable, Joan Allen. She's come a long way, and she'll be going back this evening.
Well, I didn't ask her.
The doors shall be shut in the streets, or ever the silver cord be loosed, or the golden bowl be broken, or the pitcher be broken at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the cistern. Then shall the dust return to the earth as it was, and the spirit return unto God who gave it. Vanity of vanities, saith he. All is vanity. Let us pray. Lord,
the service drones to its end. I realize that I'm already beginning to forget what Wanda looked like. Is memory that fragile? The thought scares me.
Amen.
As they prepare to go back to the man's for coffee and cake, Dora walks over to me.
Barbara, look, Zeke and Joan Allen...
They would rather I didn't go back to their place?
Well, yeah.
Fine by me. I've got a few things to say to Wanda on my own.
I'll wait for you in the car.
Thank you. They leave in knots and clusters. Like a flock of huge black birds, they strut back to their pickup trucks and station wagons and hearses. I walk to the grave. It's still open, with the casket at the bottom. There's a headstone up already. Alvin Robert Caleb Mann, 1966 to 1991. For they have sown the wind, and they shall reap the whirlwind. Hosea chapter 8, verse 7. Well, you really did it this time. Making me come all this way just to say goodbye? I never knew that places around here had such beautiful names. I was watching the road signs from the bus. It gave me something to do. Cloverdale, Florissant, Mulberry Grove, Boonville, Selena, Aurora, and Goodland. They sound like the names of magic kingdoms, don't they? Your aunt seems okay. Wanda? I wish you were here. I mean, for a start, you could go some way toward telling me how come I was up in George's room. And how come you were. And why George was in the bath. And why Fox and Hazel seemed to be avoiding me? And who the old lady was who saved my life? I mean, who was she, Wanda? Maisie Hill? I
I've never even heard her name before. I went to her funeral last week.
I was about the only one there. Just me and her daughter. That was all. I wish she was still around. There's this idea I've got, and it's something I haven't managed to put into words properly. And I know if you were here, you could help me to. Okay, here goes. Barbie's idea. It's like that people, well, that everybody has a secret world inside of them. I mean everybody. All of the people in the whole world, no matter how dull and boring they are on the outside, inside them, they've all got unimaginable, magnificent, wonderful, stupid, amazing worlds. Not just one world, hundreds of them, thousands maybe. Isn't that a weird thought? Anyway, I got you something. A present. There. Your favorite. An 80-page giant Hyperman comic featuring Tales of the Weirdo World. In order to buy it, I had to go into this bizarre little store. I mean, I don't think they'd swept the floor in a decade. And I bet the staff had to have taken unhelpfulness lessons. It was tough to find what I was looking for. There was a bunch of 14-year-old boys thumbing through porno magazines. And some new thing with about 5 different covers. Thrust Force Number 1 or something. Muscular men. And women with towering boobs. It was the kind of place that makes you feel oily and greasy and makes you wish you were somewhere else. And there was this greasy guy behind the counter.
What do you want?
I'm looking for a Hyperman title. With the Weirdzos? They live on this square planet somewhere out in outer space, and they do everything backwards? A friend told me about it.
Yeah, I got a copy from the 60s. It's not very collectible. You don't normally see it in comic book stores.
Oh.
You know what else you don't see in comic book stores?
No.
A chest as small as yours.
I wanted you to be there so badly. You would have said something to him that would have blistered his ears and curled his toes and made him feel like he was 6 inches high. I just blushed and left. Mad on the inside. Anyway, here you go. Oh, yeah! And here, a lipstick. I thought you'd like it. Tacky Flamingo, or whatever it's called. Your favorite color. Oh, there's something I need to do before I leave this for you. Hope you don't mind if I borrow the lipstick for this. Let's just cross out the word Alvin. And let's write your real name instead. There. Wanda. Hey, no problem. Least I could do.
You done?
Everything I had to do.
Well, get in, girl. I'll drive you back down to the bus station.
Got any Kleenex?
Glove box.
Don't need this veil anymore.
So what are you gonna do now?
You know what my mom always used to say? She said when I was a little girl, I'd go off and play for hours on end. And when she asked me, she'd always get the same answer. Where you been? Out. What you been doing? Nothing.
Yeah, all kids say that.
They do? I thought it was just me. Anyway, that's what I'm going to do now.
How do you mean?
Where am I going? Out. What am I going to do? Nothing.
Okay.
You see, I used to be a princess. I had a cuckoo in my head.
Oh. Well, isn't that nice?
We take the rest of the drive back in silence. And suddenly, I'm remembering. It's yesterday. I'm on the Greyhound bus,
due to get into Indianapolis about 4 a.m. Outside, it's slush and sleet. And inside, we're all uncomfortable. And the man in the seat in front of me keeps whispering,
"Mr. Wrigley hasn't got no nose."
And bursting into tears. I can hear the sloosh, sloosh of the windshield wipers. Up until now, I haven't felt tired. But now, suddenly, my chin begins to dive downward. And the second or third time this happens, I go with it. I dream of Wanda. A beautiful Wanda wearing a fabulous dress, which reminds me of Glinda in the Oz movie. Something I'm sure she'd get a huge kick out of hearing. She's drop-dead gorgeous. And she looks happy.
Hey, Barbie.
Wanda's with this girl I don't know. Young, thin, maybe 16 at the outside. Kind of a goth in a black t-shirt and black jeans and boots. And her hair is spiky and long. She has a silver ankh around her neck. And the woman goes up on tippy-toe and whispers something into Wanda's ear. Then Wanda turns around, and she seems to see me. And she waves.
Gotta go, Barbie Bibbola.
And they both wave.
See you around.
And I'm going to wave back. But the bus pulls into the station. And they open the door, and it's freezing. We all get off the bus and try to persuade a busted soup machine to give us something hot to drink. And just like that, I'm back at the bus station again. Thanks. So long, Aunt Dora. And if there's a moral there, I don't know what it is. Save maybe that we should take our goodbyes wherever we can. And that's all.
Long, long ago, before the family left the old country, and what a business that was, my child, oy, there was a young man of our people.
Grandpa, I don't want to hear a story. I want to watch TV.
TV. It's always TV. I don't want to hear about TV. You talk about TV one more time, I won't be responsible for my actions.
For Christ's sakes, Grandpa.
Enough. Your parents. What kind of things are they teaching you? In the old country, you'd never hear any of the family taking that name in vain.
Grandpa, it's just something they say over here. Everybody says it.
Oh, and I suppose if everybody cut off their heads and stuffed asafoetida into their mouths and buried their hearts at crossroads, then you'd do it too?
Grandpa.
Fine, fine, fine. It's my fault. I'm old. I remember the old ways, so what do I know? I don't watch this MTV. I don't know anything. So who listens to crazy stories?
Grandpa. Grandpa, I'm sorry. Look, I'll listen to the story.
Oh, so now you're doing me a favor, is that it?
Grandpa, I want to hear the story. I really do. Grandfather, please? Grandfather?
I've forgotten it.
You what?
I've forgotten it.
You haven't forgotten it. Come on, Grandfather. It began long, long ago, before the family left the old country.
Long, long ago, before the family left the old country.
The Sandman, Act 2, Episode 18, The Hunt.
There was a young man of our people. He was poor, but he was honest, and he lived in the forest with his father. The forests today are poor things. These were the real forests of the old country. Many entered them who never came out again. They were wilder, darker, stranger forests. There were shadows in the undergrowth between the close-packed trees. And in some of those shadows, you might see eyes, like wolves' eyes.
Wolves?
Trees there were. Old as trees can be, huge, and grasping with hearts black as sin. Strange trees that some said walked in the night.
Okay, it was a forest. It had trees in it. I'm not stupid. I got it.
So you want to tell the story? Maybe I should listen. You tell it so well.
I didn't say that. It's your story. You tell it.
In the summer, the forest was warm, and the true bears roamed. In the winter, it was cold. Oh, cold enough to freeze the skin off your face and freeze your piss before it touched the ground. In the winter, the true wolves would come down from the steppes, driven south by hunger. And there was sometimes precious little food for them, and less for us. There were few true folk in the forest. Here and there, perhaps a woodcutter or a charcoal burner and his brats. Hunters were few, but dangerous. There were clearings, and in some of the clearings, small settlements had sprung up. Nervous men and women and children huddled around flickering bonfires, hoping somehow to keep the darkness at bay. The young man's mother had died, bringing him into the world. She gave him life, a small wooden finger ring, and the name Vasily. There have been worse legacies.
Vasily? But that's...
It's a pretty common name. Anyway... Vasily and his father lived far, far from any others, deep in the forest, and saw no one, or almost no one, for travelers in those parts were few and foolhardy. The lad was 16 when a peddler woman came to their part of the forest.
Was she one of us?
No, girl. She was gypsy, Romani stock. A wise woman. She had a babushka shawl, two good teeth in her head, and two eyes bright as a bird's. She was an old woman, with straggly gray hair. Over her shoulder, she carried her pack with a few things in it. She was singing to herself to keep her courage up. And then she saw the young man sitting in the undergrowth, still as a stump.
You can come out of there, boy. Don't think I don't see you, because I do.
Vasily rose up from his sitting place. His hair was brown and long. His eyes were green. His clothes were made of soft deer leather.
And what do they call you then, when you're at home?
Vasily.
Listen, I'm hungry, boy.
Mm-hmm.
In the blink of an eye, Vasily was gone. And in another blink, he was returning, carrying a dead rabbit.
Rabbit? That's good eating. Thank you, Vasily.
They sat down then and there, and the old woman took out her pocket knife and skinned and gutted the fresh rabbit.
Do many of your people live around here? You don't have to be scared of me, lad. I'm not looking for trouble. I'm looking for customers. That'll do. Here, let me show you what I've got. All manner of wonderful things. This is the Emerald Heart of Koshay the Deathless. He kept his life in this heart, but a woman stole it, and he died. This is a cloak of night. There is a country far in the north where day never breaks. This cloak was woven from the silk of black worms who feed on the leaves of dark trees in lightless caverns beneath that land. This is the drum inescapable that Ampusa crafted from the hide of wyvern and the wood of Yggdrasil. If you beat this drum, nothing can escape you.
This cloak is fine stuff. And this emerald.
But Grandpa, how did an old gypsy woman get hold of all those wonderful treasures?
Are you crazy? An old gypsy woman's going to be walking around the forest with the emerald heart of Koschei the Deathless in her pack, or the drum inescapable.
But you said...
She was Romani. He was an outsider. It's no crime for them to cheat the outsiders.
All these things are so fine.
He'd never seen so many beautiful things in his life.
What do you want for this?
Give it back, son. He has nothing to pay for your baubles, old woman. We are poor forest folk and have nothing to spare.
Father...
You are meant to be hunting.
I was, father.
Ah, he's a good boy. Don't be hard on him.
Come, Vasily.
Thank you for the rabbit, young man.
My son... You must not talk to folk in the forest. They mean us harm.
She was just an old woman. She seemed well-intentioned.
She is not of the people.
His father said many things to him that night about the people and the folk outside the forest. But Vasily didn't listen. He was thinking about the old peasant woman and her pack. The next day, the old peddler woman was walking through the forest. She had cut herself a stick to lean on as she walked. Vasily came out of the trees and walked along with her.
My father says that the things you showed me are valueless trinkets.
Oh, you startled me. I didn't hear you coming. Not that my ears are what they were. Value is in what people think. Not in what is real. Value is in dreams, boy. But you were good to me yesterday. Roast rabbit last night, cold rabbit today, and tomorrow. That's good deeds.
She pulled out of her bag a locket on a chain. She showed it to Vasily.
Look.
What is it?
She opened the locket, and inside was a tiny portrait of a young woman.
It's a picture of the Duke's youngest daughter. Here, take it. It's yours. You look at her. Once I was more beautiful than her. I had long black hair, and I could walk, and I could smile. And I danced in every town from Skarv to Vietka. And every young man who saw me looked at me with fire in his eyes. I made mistakes. I'm not saying I didn't. My father wanted to marry me off to a fine man. But I ran away from him and got my heart broken. Do you understand me?
No.
I always followed my heart. Oh, you've a good heart. I'm Romani, I can tell. I'm sorry, my darling. I was 1,000 leagues away. Here, give me your little finger. Look into my eyes, and I'll tell you your fortune.
The peddler woman held out her hand, little finger extended, and Vasily did the same. Their fingers locked. But when she looked up at Vasily's face, into his strange green eyes, the woman jumped back in alarm.
No! What? What are you? Keep away from me!
And the old woman scuttled off into the forest like a frightened rabbit. The boy returned to his father's hut. The inside was piled and hung with skulls, deer skulls, horse skulls, rat skulls, rabbit skulls, and other trophies. His father returned that night with a stag, and together they flayed and butchered it. Together they hung the meat to dry.
It's a big one. Yeah.
We need it.
For winter was coming, and winter, as I told you, was cruel. At night, he'd take out the picture of the Duke's daughter and stare at it.
What did she look like? The woman in the miniature.
Oh, she had eyes as blue as cornflowers, lips as red as poppies, skin whiter than milk, hair as gold as the setting sun.
Okay. Yeah, okay. I get the idea.
You asked, Miss Okay, I get the idea.
Sorry.
The young man stalked the forest in the coming days, but his heart was not in the hunt. The beasts he killed, and beasts were getting harder to find as the days drew in, were killed without pride. He gathered wood without joy. He ran without delighting in his speed or his silence. One day he took his handkerchief and wrapped up his few possessions, some tarnished bronze coins, a small bone that he had carved into the shape of a small bone, a thin wooden finger ring his mother had left him.
A small bone that he had what?
Carved into the shape of a small bone.
But it was a small bone already.
He carved it into the shape of a different small bone, all right?
I'm only asking.
Look, Celeste. This is what happened, okay? Do I ask you to explain, Michael Jackson lyrics?
I don't like Michael Jackson anymore. Only dweebs and kids listen to Michael Jackson.
Last week you liked Michael Jackson. This week you don't like Michael Jackson. So what am I, a mind reader? His father was away, hunting. Vasily thought it best to leave before he returned home.
And my parents complain when I get back late from a party.
This was the old days, in the old country. We did things differently then. The lad set off into the forest. He had a stick over his shoulder with his handkerchief tied on the end, containing everything he thought valuable. And some leagues off, he encountered the peddler woman for the last time.
Old woman?
Her body was already cold, and the blood where her throat had been torn out had already hardened to a black crust. There was a look of terror on her face. Her pack was still on her back. Days later, Vasily reached the forest borders. Now, instead of the handkerchief, he was carrying the peddler woman's backpack. He arrived at an inn and went inside.
Good day, innkeeper.
Ah, good day, young fellow. We don't see many peddlers in these parts. Which way did you come?
Through the old forest.
Oh, the devil you have. Don't you know that forest is home to ghouls and ogres? You were lucky to escape with your life.
I saw nothing that could have hurt me.
The devil, you say. Well, what are you selling, peddler boy?
An emerald, a little drum, a shirt, a book, other things.
Mm-hmm. And which way are you going from here?
Which way is the palace of the Duke?
2 full weeks travel west. You must have devilish rich pickings in that pack of yours, if you were to seek to peddle to the Duke.
Vasily ate lightly of the inn's indifferent food, then went up to his room. He bolted the door.
No good.
The legs of the bed were bolted to the floor, and it could not be moved. He went to sleep on the hard floor in the opposite corner of the room. The inn had been quiet for some hours when a panel in the wall above the bed swung open.
Huh?
And an axe crashed down on the place where his head would have been. There was a moment of silence, and then, through the hidden doorway in the wall, Vasily saw the innkeeper. The innkeeper climbed through the panel. He put down his candle and turned to find that his axe had only sliced through an empty bed.
What?
And that is when Vasily snuffed the candle. Vasily had learned a valuable lesson that night. Before he left the inn, he took back the coin he had given the innkeeper for his food and lodging, feeling quite justified in so doing. He set off due west, away from the sunrise, well rested and well fed. 2 days of travel, and an early snow was beginning to fall, when up to Vasily on the road came the tallest, thinnest man he had ever seen. He wore spectacles, a tricorn hat, and his ears were pointed.
"Where are you bound, young peddler?"
asked the tall, thin man.
"I am bound where my feet take me, and where my heart wills,"
said Vasily.
"And what do you have in your pack, young peddler?"
"Oddments and trinkets, sir. Nothing of any value."
"Value is in the mind of the buyer, not the peddler."
"And is there anything you'd be seeking?"
"Indeed there is. I'm looking for a book. I thought perhaps you could sell it to me."
"And what would I be doing with a book?"
"You aren't the first to carry that pack, young man, are you? So, have you my book?"
"I have many things, including what I have been assured is in all probability the Emerald Heart of Koschei the Deathless."
"According to popular report, Koschei the Deathless kept his heart in a duck egg, and it was destroyed by a young gallant 200 years ago. No, it's the book I'm interested in. What's your price?"
And Vasily reached inside his clothing and pulled out the locket. He opened it and showed the portrait of the Duke's daughter to the tall, thin man.
"Here."
"Oh, dear me. Good gracious, no. I can't pay anything like that. I'm just a librarian. A librarian who has lost a book."
"Very well."
And the young man threw his bag back over his shoulder and continued on. When he looked back over his shoulder, the tall, thin man had gone.
"So, this thin man, was he one of the people? Was he a fairy or something? I don't believe in fairies."
"Of course you don't believe in fairies. You're 15. You think I believed in fairies at 15? Took me until I was at least 140, 150 maybe. Anyway, he wasn't a fairy. He was a librarian, all right?"
"It all sounds suspiciously postmodern to me, Grandpa. Are you sure this is really a story from the old country?"
"Listen, blood of my blood. Although I'm a hard man to anger and love you deeply, if you interrupt me again, so help me, I'll rip out your throat with my teeth."
"Sorry, Grandfather."
Vasily was alone on the road, although a raven flew far, far above him as he traveled. The sun fell and rose and fell again. He saw no one on the road. The snow had turned into sleet, and thick mud slowed his progress. On the evening of the third day, he reached the borders of another forest, and it was there that he again encountered the tall man. This time he was dressed in a swallowtail coat with striped trousers and a waistcoat. He was carrying a sack of his own. He spoke to Vasily.
You've got my book.
I've got a book.
The tall man took the sack off his back and tipped it out onto the ground. Gold glittered in piles in the wet mud.
This is yours,
he said.
If you give me the book.
Vasily just stared at him.
I don't want gold.
No?
You know my price.
I'm not getting you the woman, and that's final. Do you know the bother I had getting the gold without anyone noticing?
I'm a peddler. I have a book for sale. If you can meet my price. If not...
Yes?
I can burn it.
It won't burn.
Then I won't burn it. But it won't be yours unless you meet my price.
Oh, dear.
And as he said the words, the tall, thin man disappeared. But his voice was still there for a moment.
Can I get back to you on this one?
That night, the clouds cleared, the moon was full, and Vasily made good time. After a while, he left the path and ran through the forest, loping gently in the moonlight. He scented a high scent in the air, the smell of deer. Weighed down by his pack as he was, he gave chase to the deer. He followed her for leagues, across scrub and heath and wood, exulting in the hunt. He found himself wishing that the chase could go on forever. Himself and the deer, bound together, hunter and hunted, until the end of time. But all things must end. And as he tensed for the final leap, a small figure leapt out of a bush onto the stag. It was a girl, dressed just like Vasily. And as she brought the stag down, she twisted and broke its neck.
Good evening to you, kinsman. If you had been faster, you would have caught her, not I.
I am carrying a pack on my back. Were it not for the pack, I would be faster. I have chased her for many, many leagues.
Oh.
The girl stood up, throwing the deer over her shoulder as if it weighed nothing.
Your people any here?
Huh?
Can I accompany you?
If you wish.
There was an encampment of the people there, in the heart of the wood.
He tried to catch this deer. He failed. I succeeded.
They asked him no questions. He gave them no answers. He had never seen so many of the people before, but they were his kin, and he was not afraid. Now, behind the camp was a small hut on chicken legs, scratching idly in the dirt. And outside was Baba Yaga, the old witch woman. She was smoking her pipe.
A good evening to you, great lady.
Well spoken, little cousin. And what have you in your little bag for your old auntie, then?
I have something you've always wanted, good gossip. The Emerald Heart of Koshei, the Deathless.
Baba Yaga grinned then, and her teeth glinted iron in the moonlight.
That would be treasure indeed. And what would you want from your old auntie for that?
I need to get to the Duke's palace.
Hearing this, Baba Yaga got to her feet.
Tell me, boy, have you ever ridden the night sky in a mortar?
And with that, she picked up her great pestle and climbed inside her mortar. Vasily followed.
A mortar? Like a mixing bowl?
With a pestle. The stone baton to grind things up in it.
Oh, okay.
She beat her pestle 3 times against the side of her mortar. Under the full moon that night, Baba Yaga and Vasily flew in her mortar over the villages and churches and towns, their hair and clothes streaming out behind them in the wind. The black shadow of Baba Yaga, babies screamed and mothers miscarried, milk soured and men went mad. Below them, Jews were burned in their houses and Romani travelers were beaten to death. Nightbirds screamed, and owls hooted, and wolves howled. Faster than the wind they rode that night, and before dawn they landed in the courtyard of the Winter Palace of the Duke. Vasily leapt out of the mortar, but Baba Yaga said,
Well, my payment?
With goodwill, great lady.
And thus, with both hands, he gave to her the green glass heart.
This is the emerald heart of Koshay the Deathless. Well, good luck to you, boy.
She beat her pestle 3 times against the side of her mortar. Churches fell down, roads cracked, towers crumbled. And Baba Yaga rose high into the air, screeching loud enough to wake the dead.
Hold on. I thought you said it wasn't the Emerald Heart of Koshay the Deathless. You said the old peddler woman had lied.
Maybe I was mistaken. Maybe Baba Yaga was easily fooled. Who knows?
Huh?
You shouldn't trust the storyteller. Only trust the story. Anyway, the young man went up to the great door and banged heavily on it with his fist. It was opened by a small fat man holding a candelabra, wearing a wig which stank of powder.
Yes?
Vasily showed him the picture in the locket.
I seek this woman.
Oh, you do, do you? So, it's true what they say about the full moon, then? Goodbye.
I have come many leagues to see her.
Oh, great and noble lord, I would not dream of denying you anything. But the noble lady must be woken, and she must be dressed and bathed and powdered before she sees someone as important as yourself. Peddler boy. Follow me.
The little fat man with the candelabra led the young man down the corridor of the great hall of the palace, which was in truth not very grand at all. Vasily followed, his pack over his shoulder, looking around him, fascinated. It was the biggest real house he had ever been in. The little man stank of fear, but Vasily could not smell it, for scent and powder surrounded him like mist, and Vasily was unused to the folk of the cities.
Down this way, sir. The steps lead to the waiting room.
At the